Hello and welcome to NYPD Blue Balls. This is a commentary episode for Season 6, Episode 18, Mr. Roberts of NYPD Blue. What that means is that we are talking about the episode literally as it's playing in the background. I even asked Kyle to turn it down towards the beginning of it. If you need to find the episode, NYPD Blue is currently available on Hulu in America, but sometimes they have these syndication edits. It's important to do your research to make sure you're getting the whole thing. And the last time I checked, I think it's back on Amazon. Certain episodes that I purchased to make sure I had the full version seemed to be there. I hope that's correct. Also, big news for Australia and New Zealand. NYPD Blue is available on Disney Plus, so apparently Mickey Mouse is cool with racial slurs and man-ass in Australia and New Zealand. Anyway, just wanted to warn you, there are a lot of weird audio issues. I am recording it in a room with a dog that cannot stay put. The two mic situation got a little wonky with recording my voice and his voice at the same time. A lot of excuses. Anyway, here we go. All right, welcome to NYPD Blue Balls. This is Season 6, Episode 18, Mr. Roberts. And it's a commentary episode. I'm Kirk and the other voice is Kyle, and we're at the intro of the episode.
Yes, we are. Just watching people talk on the phone, walk around the city.
Okay, so this one opens with... What's his name? Mike Roberts. Mike Roberts' body is on top of this car, right? It hasn't been revealed yet, but we know that.
He's face down.
And he landed from like an 8-story building onto a car right next to a homeless guy, and he didn't notice. From what little time I spent in New York, that adds up. Like, I would expect that to happen all the time. People just not notice something like that.
Well, I think that was Maria showed me this like TikTok. Actually, either TikTok or like a video. It's like this guy, and he just goes, "You want to know how you can see who's from New York and who isn't?" And then he just like walks into the middle of a crowd and just screams at the top of his lungs. And then he walks to the camera and goes, "Everyone who looked isn't from New York."
It's true.
And I feel like that's 100% true.
Do me a favor, could you turn it? Sorry, could you turn it down, the episode in your on your end? Just because I can hear it.
Better?
Yeah, that's good. This is also a great episode to point out that when Sipowicz is upset, he becomes nearly impossible to work with.
Oh, yeah, he becomes enraged. He's just screaming and yelling at everybody. Like, that guy's supposed to know that Mike Roberts used to be a cop. That kid's like 4 years old.
He also says, "Oh, tell the super we're sorry for kicking his door in." It's like, "Oh, we're just gonna go destroy the property because we don't have time to wait because we know this guy."
Also, like, what are you gonna find out? He fell out a window.
Also, what I love about it is, like, when before they find out it's Mike Roberts, they are like, "Oh, the homeless guy didn't notice that a body fell." And then the second they do find out it's Mike Roberts, like, "What do you mean you didn't notice? You didn't notice a body fell?" Like, like, okay, so now you have a problem with this guy.
Yeah, beforehand it was going to make the investigation annoying. Now it's really annoying.
He said he probably thought it was thunder followed by a warm rain. I'm like, well, imagine, like, I mean, just for a moment, imagine you're that guy and you woke up and there's just blood dripping on you. You know, besides the trauma of being homeless and no one gives a fuck about you.
But my question is, why is blood trickling on him?
Apparently it landed right in front of him and he was... Also, the episode began with the cop going, "Oh, we were going to rouse this homeless guy because apparently he shouldn't be homeless near our trash cans." Like, I don't understand what the problem was. And then
they move homeless all the time in the city. Like, if they're in a spot too long, or like if they start setting up like a camp or something, they come in and they'll start moving them around. Because moving them, telling them to leave is better than actually like dealing with the issue.
Yeah. We don't want to like do anything except tell them to skedaddle. Here's another example of Sipowicz just being impossible to work with because they mentioned that the gun hasn't been fired, and then Sipowicz is like, oh yeah, so he didn't shoot himself, then put it back in the thing, and then jump out the window. And it's like... It's just, he's just such a dick about everything when he's upset. See?
It's so funny how angry he is. It's so funny because he hates him.
He hates Roberts, you mean?
He hates Roberts. So it's so funny that, like, he's so angry about the whole situation.
Well, it's not in this episode, but I noticed noting it for the other one. Like, everybody talks shit about Roberts until he dies. Like, and I guess that's true of everybody. Like, suddenly all the respect and concern and care for someone comes out of you when they're dead.
Guess, but, like, fuck.
But,
they roast Roberts. Like, to his face, they're constantly roasting him.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
like,
yeah.
Andy at some points, I mean, maybe this is too harsh, but Andy at some points basically to his face tells him, like, not only are you not a good cop, but, like, you're not a good human being. Like, he does that numerous times. And Roberts even, like, has to, like, ask him and be like, hey, like, aren't I good, Andy? Like, I'm not as bad as you think. Like, it's really weird.
This scene also has the phrase that was used in one of the articles that I read in What Would Sipowicz Do? A cop eats his gun, which is probably one of the, like, darkest of phrases from NYPD Blue. The idea that if a cop commits suicide, he eats his gun. And I was like, that's not a pleasant thing to be remembered for in terms of your language-changing television.
Yeah, dude, it's very dark. Very, very dark, especially because, like, when a cop does eat his gun, most of them do everything they can to make it look like a cop didn't eat his gun. So, it just doesn't make sense why it's so harsh if you're gonna try to cover it up anyways, you know?
Yeah.
It's weird.
Here's one of their exposition dumps where they explain that Roberts had something on his mind, but he never got it out. And Sipowicz is wondering, does he have something to do with this because he couldn't get it out of him? But then we have John the PAA kind of acting a little weird.
Yeah, I think this is the beginning. I mean, because I think I've told you, like, because of this, I've kept going recently with it, and I'm, like, in season 11. But I feel like around here, they definitely start to, like, include John more with things. Like, they give him more involvements with, like the storyline, obviously. Like, he gets to start to, like, there's fucking, yeah. And just, like, they start to include him more as an actor and in the storyline here.
And, I mean, this... Because this storyline, we've already mentioned, this storyline is what concludes the entire season, really. And
yeah.
John is heavily involved. He's the one that spurred Cullinan's anger to try and get him hurt in some way, which then included Roberts. And so John is extremely instrumental to the entire ending of this season. And you mentioned it, I think, in an earlier episode. You wanted to bring up, can Bill Buttrip, I think his name is, the guy who plays John, can he actually act? Because you said he's not a good actor.
There are just some times where, like, and we'll see them soon.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep it in the front of your mind. There's just some choices that were made that just are a little wonky.
And here we have Andy confronting his homophobia by getting uncomfortable that a gay man is getting close to him.
The funny thing is, this is actually, like, a good scene to show, like, people who are homophobes, because you can just be like, hey, look at that. Like, you guys are getting nervous around the guy who's, like, all he's, like, this dude's, like, mad scared for, like, his life almost. Or, like, what's going on? And all Andy can think is, like, oh, this homo wants to touch me. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this guy has no, like, there's no, like, this guy's not trying to, like, hit on Andy. He's not trying to kiss him. He's not trying to touch him. He's not trying to hold his hand. None of that shit. And all Andy can think is, like, oh, no, this homo's trying to, like, get at me.
Well,
you know what
well,
I mean? Like, it's fucking weird.
I will say.
I can't say homo. I gotta be careful.
In defense of Sibowitz, he is kind of that standoffish to everyone about everything. Like, he doesn't really like anybody touching him or getting up in his space. But I would say that...
Do you think he's like Dad, where he's just like a don't-touch-me person?
Yeah, yeah. He doesn't like physical touch, period. But also the point I'm making is, he tells, like, I wouldn't say he's super homophobic, but he doesn't know how to, like... He doesn't know how to act around John yet, because he calls him Gay John. He could just call him John. There's no other Johns in the department currently, and there's no need to separate.
But I mean, let's be real. Statistically, we're in New York City, and he's a part of the police force. How many Johns do you think he knows? Like,
he probably knows a lot of Johns. There's also two Johns.
He knows a lot of Johns.
He has two different John partners in 12 seasons, I think.
Yes.
So,
and then one of his John's partners is named after his dad, who's also named John. So,
a lot of Johns.
Statistically, I think Andy knows a lot of Johns.
They also arrest a lot of Johns.
It's like the whole Neil Fatneil thing.
What was it? Neil's bald. He's black. I don't see through that lens. Anyway. But here's also where Sipowicz is taking over the entire room because he's upset that he didn't get it out of Roberts that he found out. So he literally takes over the entire room full of detectives to tell him what's up about Roberts, even though all of them are like, I don't think that's going to work, Andy.
And he does Fancy's job of like telling Metaboy, like, okay, you're next. What's up? Like, okay, what? Let me see that. Pass it over to Diane. Like, and Fancy's just sitting there, and again, doesn't say a thing.
Yeah, I'll talk about it when we get to the next episode, whenever that is.
Hold on. We're going to see the best part, Kirk. It's the beginning of Mike Robertini.
No, we don't need to talk about Mike Robertini. Sure, it's half the episode, but I don't want to talk about Mike Robertini.
We have to talk about it because the question is did Steve Carell gained influence from this storyline for his storyline in The Office where he writes Phil Scott.
God damn it. Okay, so we're there. So, like, I forgot about this episode. I think we all did. But basically, they find out that Roberts, who died, is writing, like, a noir novel. And he's suspiciously talking about cases he worked, and he's using the name Mike Robertini as his protagonist. And so they have Metavoy in a terrible voiceover going like, okay, so it sounds like it's actually this case. He's Mike Robertini. Cullinan is this guy Callahan. And then I'm like, okay, why are we in this shitty voiceover? How come we're not cutting to them? And then I was like, oh, fuck. That's right. They did this really cheesy, shitty noir shit. And we're about to watch that.
But Kirk, I feel like at some point during like the 90s, every TV show like ended up doing like some kind of like noir episode.
Version of this? You know who did? No joke. I watched the entire series. Boy Meets World did one.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. Yes, they did. And I also feel like Family Matters did one.
I think so, too. Yeah.
Like, I feel, I know it's a joke, Always Sunny ended up doing one.
Uh-huh.
Like,
uh-huh.
Like, even though they're jokes, like, people, like, if your show's on long enough, you do, like a weird noir episode.
I think that's just kind of like, that's like the In Case of Emergency Break Glass script. Like,
but I feel like in the '90s, like the reason they did it is because like it was like a callback to like just like a different time, just like to those like to that kind of time, like of like I don't know, like because this has a feel of like nostalgia, you know. I just feel like it's these white guys missing this type of like cop stuff on TV.
Yeah, with terrible writing. Because that's the only thing that I kept thinking while watching these scenes. I was like,
geez. So now the question, here's the question, okay?
Uh-huh.
Now, the question I have is, this is what will change my opinion on the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
Is it supposed to be good?
No, it's not. No, it's not. Whatever you're saying.
Write it and make it so it's supposed to be like a like B-level, like noir type style thing.
The reason is twofold. One, they want to establish that Mike Roberts doesn't actually know how to write. He doesn't do a good job writing.
His dialogue is garbage.
The other reason is I think they did it, and it could just be arrogance or foolishness on my part. But I feel like they did it to be like, you see, our show's written well. This is how some cop shows used to be written, but ours has, like, depth and characters and, like, a manner of speech that is actually different and interesting, while this is stilted and shitty.
Or could it be that this, like, so now that we've kind of established that the writing isn't supposed to be good.
Yeah, for sure.
They're establishing Mike as, like, being a shitty writer because, you know, he kind of is. But, like, maybe this whole noir thing is just it's to show us just, like, how sad Mike's life was. But how much he really valued his job as being a detective. Even though he was in, like, shitty situations, you know, even though he put himself in those situations and shit, he still really liked being around those guys. Because, like, we're watching the scene right now where he talks with Medavoy and Martinez. He doesn't fucking know those guys in real life. But, like, he had this moment of them, like, hanging out, that saying they missed him. And, like, I don't know, it's just, like, it's also him showing that, like, he misses being a cop, I feel like.
Yeah, it's... It's also supposed to kind of establish that, at least I think, Mike Roberts is, trying to rewrite the story so he's a hero when he isn't. He's a bumbling buffoon and an idiot. Like, all the...
Oh, whoa, that's harsh.
Dude, he was fucking informant druggy and getting her drugs for the evidence locker. He started a security company and works for this rich asshole who gets him to get drugs for him. Like, he's the idiot here. He gets used by people smarter than him to get what they want.
Yeah, but I also think he with his with this thing is he's trying to show that yes, he did all those shitty things. I'm not excusing that.
Uh-huh.
But what I think he's trying to show is that deep down inside, he always wanted to do the right thing. It's just that, like, something always just kept getting in the way.
Yeah, fair. It's...
Because he tries to do the right thing with Andy, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, he writes out...
to tell Andy the right thing. There's a point where he's trying to do the right thing.
Yeah. And right now, the detectives are talking about setting up a sting for Cullen and... Because they got nothing to connect him with this, even though they're pretty sure he's involved.
Yeah, they can't do anything. Andy still won't get over the fact that, like, Roberts had something to tell him. Like, at some point it just gets like, dude, stop talking about it.
Also, I mean, yeah, and quick mention, Michael Harney is the one who plays Mike Roberts. Orange is the New Black. He was on Deadwood. I wanted to give a
True Detective.
And True Detective. I wanted to give a shout-out to the guy that played Cullinan and Callahan, Todd Warning. He's not really in a lot of stuff I watched, but I felt like he's doing a good job playing a shitty version of himself and then the actual shitty version of himself later in the episode.
He does a good job of being a, like, rich twerp.
A rich twerp and an asshole and yeah, and a scumbag.
With issues, yeah. He's really good at it.
And he's right,
really good.
And right now we're dealing with the madam who... I always find it awkward when anytime they write a scene where a woman comes into the house and literally every man like looks at her as she comes in and walks to a room. Oh, here is where Danny catches. I'm sorry. Here's what. Sorry.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
I just wanted to mention that Danny casually mentions that he thinks half of New York would pay to have sex with Russell.
Yeah, I mean, why not, dude?
what were you
like,
gonna
why not? Say what you want to say?
What were you gonna say?
Nothing.
So yeah, basically they force this woman to get Cullen in with a plant, and she doesn't want to do it because, you know, that'll screw up her her whoring industry. And eventually...
It's going to fuck up her business, Kirk. You can't get business get fucked up.
Look, she's a girl boss, okay? And sex work is work. But, actually...
She's a girl boss.
I did kind of enjoy how this woman is so matter-of-fact and, like, kind of all business from the word go. Where she's like, yeah, I'm not going to do that because it's going to ruin my business. And then they're like, well, you're not going to have much of a business left. And she's like, yeah, his lawyer's going to get you for entrapment and just involve me with it, too. And they basically say,
But then she basically, like, just is like, all right, I'll do it.
Well, they threaten to say, we'll just take down your whole operation. So they know that she's, you know, selling hookers.
Well, everyone knows that she's selling hookers, but, I mean...
But I do think that she does a really good job selling that she doesn't really know this prostitute. Like, once again, I know nothing about the business of prostitution myself. But it seems like she does a really good cover to explain, like, yeah, I don't actually represent this... drug addict prostitute, but I know that you're interested. You know, I figured I'd pay it forward.
Yeah, it's like a friend of a friend has this girl and her and his and her his her stable.
I don't know. I don't know if they're that cool with each other. From what I've heard about, you know. Pimps and madams, they're more territorial and more aggressive. They don't really... There's not a lot of trading.
Yeah, territory is different, Kirk, than product. You have to remember, like, the girl... Like, this is gonna come off fucked up and shit, but, like, the girl isn't territory. The girl's a product. So, it's different. Like, if one pimp in Brooklyn was to call one pimp in the Bronx... And be like, yo, I got this, like, certain type, like, of girl that, like, I can give, but I get, like, a certain cut. Like, that's what they're going to do, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay, just because we got to that scene, would you be comfortable with any of your coworkers shoving holes into your arms? It took to the second watch to get me to realize that, and I was like, fuck no. Hey, that's a big no thank you.
No, I mean, as long as they're not going to put air in my veins, I'd be okay with it. But I feel like now there's so many, like, better ways to go about it. Like, why wouldn't you use, like,
makeup?
You know what I mean? Like, there's got to be a better, there's got to be something different we can do.
Yeah, it really bugs me that the idea was, no, we'll just get Danny to poke some holes in her, like Swiss cheese.
Yeah, fuck it, why not?
And right now we have Leo Cohen acting like a goddamn baby.
Yeah, dude, he's acting like a bitch, dude, for no reason, too. Like, she's not gonna fuck this guy.
Yeah, he... what, like...
it's not like she is a prostitute. Like, she's just, like, she's just gonna play one to get this guy to, like, fuck up so they can arrest him. I don't think you're allowed to, like, commit the act of prostitution, blow the dude, and then arrest him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, South Park did not... South Park was not accurate when they said... or when they showed the guy actually having sex with them and then charging them. But no, I... like, to me, it made no sense. Like, I can understand if you're concerned, like, oh, she could get hurt. I don't want to put her in that situation. Just please be safe. But I don't... I really don't understand. Yeah, don't go grabbing his dick. All right? Don't be grabbing on his dick while you're doing... while you're doing this sting, okay? It, like, makes no sense. She's not gonna do that.
You know this guy that we think has killed a bunch of prostitutes that you're about to go talk to? I don't want you getting sexually aroused and touching his penis, okay? Because that's, like, this murderer might get you aroused and you need to touch him. Like, what, dude? Like,
you're being...
How about this? How about, like, she's about to go enter, like, a dangerous situation. Like, see how she's doing. Check up on her. See if she needs anything.
Be supportive, maybe.
Like, you... Guess what, brother? You ain't going anywhere. You stormed out like a bitch and went home. She's about to go, like, have to talk to a murderer. Like, be a little chiller. You know what I mean?
So, this scene...
like, it's just fucking crazy. Like, this dude's been whiny from the get-go.
I wanted to talk
about... And the fact that he scored her, like, it's just because of his job.
So we just passed the scene. So, Medavoy and Martinez talk about, like, the book thing, and then they make jokes about making other books and shit. It ends with Medavoy just sitting on the bench and going, Mike Roberts had balls. And clearly, there was, like, a speech or something, and they just cut it out? Because, like...
Yeah.
Like, the scene just ends with him going, Mike Roberts had balls. And you're like, what?
It's a very weird and very, like, abrupt ending, for sure. For sure.
And now here we have Cullinan, who wants to, you know...
And did Mike Roberts have balls, or was he just an idiot?
Yeah, that was a... That's why it makes me think there should have been more to the speech. Like, because how did he have balls?
Yeah, and the whole time they're making fun of him, too. So it's like, yeah, there has to be more to it. But we've noticed that happens a lot on the Hulu ones.
The editing, you mean?
Have you ever met anyone who rolls their money up like that with a rubber band?
Oh, no, but I've never really met a lot of people that have 5,000 to... just drop on prostitutes, so.
Fair enough.
Now, there was, during this scene, Fancy says this guy must have a 1-inch dick and then immediately regrets it because he remembers that Russell's in the van.
Yeah,
that was awesome.
Do you think, this isn't a question about the TV show, but do you think, like, people who, like, prostitutes have to adjust for inflation?
Well, I do think when they meet with the accountant at the end of the month, they discuss it. When
and do we think they're paying? And do we really think they're paying taxes?
Look, as long as they're getting paid more than teachers, I'm happy.
Well, we know that's definitely happening.
God damn it. How did we get here during this scene?
So Coleman's being a weirdo, and he's basically saying, I want to watch you get off.
And he means get high.
Yeah.
Which...
Yeah, he wants to watch her shoot up.
Which, I'm going to be honest, the first time I saw it, I was like, I'm going to watch you get off. And then I was like, well, she has to probably get in a more comfortable position. And then she started pulling out the kit, and I was like, oh, all right.
He even, like, positions her the way he wants. So, like, is, obviously it is a thing, but, like, is watching people shoot drugs a thing? Or is it the... Or is it the fact that, like, he knows that she's gonna die?
Well, this is because he knows she's gonna die, but I'm pretty
sure... Yeah, so he's not getting off on the fact that, like, she's doing the act of shooting up. He's getting off on the fact that he knows that she's gonna shoot up and then die.
Well, I think it started with he likes watching them shoot up drugs, and then once one of them OD'd, it then turned into that. But that doesn't surprise me, because there are Reddit and the internet community has really shown me that there's a subreddit for everybody. Whatever flavor of ice cream.
Oh, Dick.
So I don't know about you, but when I watched this scene, especially when they come in and arrest him, I was watching, like, every second very closely, because I was like, what is James Sinclair gonna use to get him off of this? The vendetta message, the fracture your skull line, I was like, he's gonna use all of it. It almost seems like it'd be better if no one said a word except the Miranda rights.
Yeah, it would have been best if they just kicked the door in and then been like, you're under arrest, read his rights, put his cuffs on him and got him out of there, and didn't talk until he was gone. Like, until one of them took him down to the car, then they started discussing shit.
Because it is brought up in the next episode, but I just feel like, especially with a guy like that, it's like, don't say anything. Don't say anything.
Yeah, don't say a damn thing. Yeah, especially because you know what lawyer he's going to get, and you know what it's going to be.
So this is the guy whose apartment Cullinan used. I wanted to give a shout-out to Matt McCoy. Here he's playing Trent, but he was on Seinfeld, True Detective, a whole bunch of television shows. But I recognize it.
I vaguely remember him in Seinfeld. I think he was like Bizarro Jerry.
I think so. But
he was part of like a lame boyfriend or something. So yeah, I vaguely remember him.
But I remember him, Disney Channel original movie days. He was the father of the main character in Alley Cat Strike.
Yes.
The bowling movie.
Yes.
That I rewatched a little less than a year ago, and it is trash. It is such a bad movie.
Like, all of those movies are so bad, but when you go to rewatch them, they're so funny.
No, I'm sorry. Not all of them are bad. Respect Brink, please.
Kirk, Brink was trash as well,
dude. You're wrong. You're just wrong. It was a perfect movie. It's Godfather, Godfather 2, and then Brink.
Godfather 2, and Brink. Wow.
I'll just say that Matt McCoy does a very good job being like a flustered, frustrated, scared dude.
Very flustered, frustrated, entitled. Like, he does play like a rich dude's friend who's like nervous 100%.
And Sipowicz, I think it's one of those guys that plays off Sipowicz really well, because Sipowicz tries to agitate him, which then works completely to give him over to Danny to give him all the information that they need. But now, you know, even though this is a great scene and great acting, I have to go back. Because we were talking about Disney Channel original movies. I also watched the movie Don't Look Under the Bed, because we had a famous face who was in that as well from a previous episode. That movie was like That movie felt like a rated R, almost sequel to like Drop Dead Fred, but then Disney got a hold of it and just got rid of all the cursing.
Don't look under the, I don't remember Don't Look Under the Bed.
Basically, like a 16-year-old starts seeing an imaginary friend, and then they have to thwart the boogeyman from taking that 16-year-old's younger brother. But it's implied very heavily that the 16-year-old kind of wants to fuck the imaginary friend.
Gotcha.
It's pretty... It feels like a lot of scenes' tension was just cut a little bit when it could have been very weird and over-sexual. Also, very scary towards the end, because the boogeyman is a nightmare. And we were talking way too much about that instead of NYPD Blue. Anyway.
Andy calls him Norman Bates.
That's right. And Danny, like, rewatching it again, like, I am way younger than Danny Sorensen. I know who fucking Norman Bates is. Like, I feel like, I don't know. I feel like that's not a...
Oh, definitely, for sure. At the time, I definitely, at the time that this came out, the age I was, I knew who Norman Bates was.
It seems weird, like, that Danny doesn't.
But then again, like, we got to go to, like, fucking Universal Studios, you know?
We also watch movies. There's some people out there that don't watch any movies, and
Kirk, I've never seen the original Psycho. I still don't know Norman Bates is. Like,
but you saw the Vince Vaughn Gus Van Sant that one though, right?
I did.
With Anne Heche and Vince
Vaughn. I have basically a shot for shot remake, I've heard, so I feel like I don't have to see the original.
Yeah, basically that's what I heard too. I haven't seen that one, but I own the original Psycho. Here's James Sinclair, played by Daniel Benzali. I wrote it terribly. This dude kills it.
It's a bummer they don't use him more.
He really should have been in like half of the show because he's so good.
Like. He is the villain.
He's like, such a perfect villain.
He could have been like this whole year's villain. Like, he should have been the villain somehow. Like, somehow he was doing something to fuck with one of the detectives, and like, or something. And then like, I don't know, but he is like too good to not use. You know, acting wise, especially as this character. And like, I just don't think they. I think they miss a chance of getting to use him, you know?
Well, it's also awkward because we can have that conversation. Is it because they use him so rarely that we love him so much? You know what I mean? Or could he have sustained being this good that whole time? Because he was in a lot of season one, and he pops up now and again throughout like the rest of the series, even all the way to the last season. And... I don't know. I do wish he was in it more, but I wonder if he was in it more, would we like him less?
Too, especially with the way everything was going with NYPD Blue, and like, I don't know. Yeah, maybe he kind of runs his course. But again, like the first like couple seasons, I feel like they are on like their point as like a writing team and as a directing team. And, like, all that shit, acting. So, like, maybe he would... I don't know. I just feel like they could have had him at some point, and it would have, I don't know, it could have helped it out. I don't know.
He's also...
Maybe, I don't know.
He's also the perfect foil to Sipowicz. Like, very intelligent, very well-dressed, very direct, serious. Everything he does is, like, perfectly measured and said and done. But he has no, like, moral center at all. Like,
yeah.
He makes no, like, bones about doing...
about it either. Yeah.
And it's him and Sipowicz going head-to-head is so perfect because they are the opposite of each other. Here we get to see a little bit of Kirkendall and her Kirkendalls. And now we get quiet all of a sudden.
I don't know what you want me to say to it. I don't know what you want me to say to it.
She implies that she wouldn't take Mark McGuire's shit, and I say, yeah, you would, because them steroid hits hit harder.
Wow, Jesus Christ.
That's way worse about Mark McGuire than anything. I'm sure he's a lovely man. Definitely did steroids to hit home runs.
Oh, definitely. I don't think anyone's arguing about that.
She basically, as she's getting dressed, says that she's done with Leo, which we all cheered.
She's not going to take any man's shit.
Because let's be honest, that was she's way out of Leo's league. And Leo's such a bitch.
For sure.
Leo's such an asshole.
Yeah, dude, especially if, like he's going to get mad at you just, like, doing your job.
Okay, so...
like, that's kind of fucked up.
So this scene... God damn this scene. Okay, so... Medavoy is still reading the Robertini shit, which is proof that Medavoy must consume trash media, that he's like, I want to read more of this.
No, it's just proof that Medavoy doesn't have a life, dude.
And what he reads right now...
Like, did he forget he has fucking children?
Well, he doesn't live with them anymore.
Go see them instead of reading this shit. See if you can take him to the park. Like, you're reading a man's notebooks. Like, it's dark outside. You had to turn the light on because all the lights are off. And it's basically so you could jerk off the whole story about Mike Robertini wanting to bone Donna.
Okay, so this is what we need to give some context. So, this is Gail O'Grady. She used to be Donna, the, like, first PAA. She had an affair with Medavoy, blah, blah, blah.
I would say the PAA.
Yeah, well, John showed up, so she was the PAA.
I guess we'll have to have a Battle Royale episode about that. Because acting-wise, Billy Birch up in the ground.
Okay, well, okay. All right, we'll just
spoiler.
Pretty big spoiler, Kyle. The kind of spoiler that I cannot in good conscience leave in the episode. Anyway, back to it.
Wait till you see him try to cry. Then we'll talk about who's fucking can act and not.
Moving on. Kyle, much like Mike Roberts, I don't think acting and talent are what you're looking at when it comes to Gail O'Grady. Anyway, so... So, obviously this never actually happened to Mike. This is all just fan fiction in his head.
Oh, yeah, 100%. This is all coming from his the small dealings with her. This all comes with, like, the small dealings he had with her, like, just when he was in the squad in the beginning.
So, a couple questions. One, is this the worst way to have her cameo? Like, hey, we're going to bring back Donna for the dumbest fucking shit ever, where the writing is terrible and it's for basically Roberts's spank bank.
It's not just Roberts's, it's a little bit of Medavoy too.
Yeah, that was the other question. Did Medavoy jerk off reading this? Because you know the scene continues. Did Medavoy... Look at that smile. Look at that fucking cheese-eating smile. Oh, goddamn.
I would hope not at work.
But it's Medavoy. He's reading these notebooks in the middle of the night at his job.
She can help him out. Give him advice. Blow him.
And it ends with, everybody loves a beautiful broad. Maybe I can do this. That's the end of the episode.
I just hope he wouldn't jerk off at work. Like, maybe if he got home and he was, like, in the comfort there and he just started to, like, think about the writing and just, like, the writing moved him. But he sits there, like, longingly, like he's troubled by what he just read, so I don't know how to take that.
Yeah, anyway, we're at the end credits. I hated this episode.
Okay, what do you hate about it?
I think it's bold as hell to, in the middle of your show that's kind of celebrated for writing, celebrated for its realism and its characters, to do this stupid noir thing for so long that's so bad, even to prove a point. I don't think it was a good idea, and I didn't like it.
Fair enough.
That's why I really don't like this episode. Also, they squandered a cameo, because that mustn't have been easy to get her back, even though she's uncredited. I think she saw it and was like, fuck that, do not put my name in this. I doubt that's what happened, but it's just bad. I didn't like it. I also don't really like Mike Roberts as much as you do, so just having a whole episode about him kind of...
Fair enough, I love Mike Roberts. he's a bigger... I like him because he's, like, such a fuck-up.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, and the way him and Andy play off each other is, like, yin and yang, and so it's just funny to me. I don't like this episode because I think it's along the line with you, like, the noir thing that goes on too long.
Yeah.
I get you're trying to make it sound like it is written by Mike Roberts, so you're making it sound like, you know, it is a little dumber, it's dumbed down as the writing, but, like, it also makes that makes it harder to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
To be honest with you, I never really had an opinion about Donna's cameo, but now that, like, you put it the way you put it, I do think, like, they squandered it. Like, why not it be an episode where, like, they get a call about, like, a robbery or something, and it's her, and she's, like, in the city, but she, like, never told Greg.
Yeah.
And she's, like, married, to somebody new who's, like, looks exactly like Greg.
Yeah. There's so many things you could have done.
I do think that the cameo that she does get is pretty crappy.
Because even if she's like, I can do one scene. Like, I'm in town, I can do one scene, and then I can go. Just to kind of give a little props to the show that I was on. Whatever the reason.
Yeah.
If she's like, I have one scene, you could have made that scene, she shows up to the department on, like, a real busy day, and says hi to everybody, and meets the new people, says hi to the old people, has a moment with Greg, and then has a moment with John, and Fancy, and then leaves. Instead, they were like, you know what'll be great? Let's shove her into this noir thing that sucks ass. And have that in the episode.
Not only are we going to shove her into this noir thing that sucks ass, but it's with a character that she didn't really have, like, an in-depth, like, relationship or storyline with.
Yeah, and every, like, time we see him with a woman, he says something fucked up.
Metavoy is reading the story, and so, yeah, maybe that's the tie-in, but, like, you know, like, it's basically, like you said, it's basically a Mike Roberts wet dream.
Yeah. It's not good. I didn't like it, but, you know, it was still had good moments. It still had funny jokes, and it's pretty funny how Mike Roberts wrote really racist things into it, but made the other characters say it. Like, it's suddenly not racist for him to write it. I don't know if you caught that in the episode.
Yeah, like, James said a bunch of shit. And I think Mike Robertini even says at one point, he's like, oh, well, you said it, not me.
Oh, yeah, he does that twice. He's like, you said it. You said it. I didn't say it.
He's like, you said it, not me. Remember, you said it.
Yeah. It's I don't know.
It's really, yeah.
Anything else about it before we wrap it all up?
I mean, how many more episodes left of this season?
19, 20, 21, 22, I think four?
Yeah. The rest of the three are solely based around... No, they're not solely based around, but, like, some of the main conversation is this Colin and Child.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, so.
We're coming up to the end of season six, which, just as a reminder, is halfway through the series. Oh, God. Well, later, everybody.
Wow.
Wow, indeed. Thank you for listening to this episode of NYPD Blue Balls. If you can, please rate and review the show in whatever platform you're using to listen to it. It helps it get seen in the algorithm. And more importantly, people might start watching NYPD Blue, the best show ever. We are on Instagram at Asher Brothers Podcast. We're on Twitter at Asher Bros Pod, which mostly I look over. And I'll be honest, I took a break from it recently. I took a break from all the stuff. So there's probably some stuff unanswered. I apologize for that. If you need more NYPD Blue anything in your life, check out a couple of books out there. What Would Sipwits Do? A collection of articles written about the show. True Blue, a book written by the creators and consultants about the first couple seasons. And Gene Kendall's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue. I think it's on audiobook now, but I do know that it's 99 cents on Amazon, so that is a steal. Thanks again for listening. I hope you have a great day, week, month, or year. This is not a Friends podcast, and I hope that you are cool and kind and happy with whatever you're doing. Peace.